With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The drought is over. Norwich City scoring 4 goals to get their promotion push very much back on track. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. We also come into you as ever on Future Radio 107.8 FM. I'm Dave Freezer and joined by Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell to look back on, well, as I think everyone has used the phrase, it's just what the doctor ordered, really. Chaps, how are you to start with, Paddy? A snowy week. What did your little man make of his first sight of snow?
He's pretty nonplussed, to be fair, mate. He's only coming up 9 months. So we did get him out in the garden, and then we realised we don't have any proper footwear for him quite yet that fits his feet. So we had to sort of almost put bin bags on his feet. Not quite, but there's these, I won't go into it because it's very boring, but there's these plasticated thing you can put over his socks or whatever. So yeah, no, that was good. That was good. But other than that, the big drama in our house was, what I told you before the game, was the boiler decided to pack up Friday night. Which is not what you need. Not what you need when it's minus whatever outside and you got a 9 month old in the house. So thankfully we had some storage heaters. But it transpired it wasn't actually the boiler. It was, again, very boring for anybody who's not bothered about Arctic weather impacting on boilers. You didn't tune in to listen to this, but you're going to have to anyway. But it was the condenser pipe outside that was basically frozen. You know, it kind of had icicles coming off it. Because, I mean, what we've had about a week of not much above zero, have we, during the day and overnight. So the high-tech solution was to get a boiling kettle of water and pour it on the pipe. And lo and behold, the boiler fired into – I wish I'd have known that at 11 o'clock on Friday night as opposed to 9 a.m. Saturday morning, but it wasn't too bad. Plenty of blankets and, like I say, storage heaters. So, yeah, my brush with this cold snap is not a very pleasant one. And particularly yesterday, boys, I don't know what you thought, but that was my feet took until about 9 o'clock last night to thaw out. I know we're in a privileged position. Don't get me wrong. We'll get that straight out there. But that was bone-chillingly cold yesterday. So it was good to see some attacking football to warm us up. There you go. There's your link.
Yeah, it was, if we'd have had a 0-0 yesterday, I think we'd have been a bit stressed. I genuinely think that might be the coldest football match that I've covered. I've done lots of football matches. When I was a junior reporter, sort of back in, 2009 or something, I remember doing, when I worked at the Scunthorpe Telegraph, I got sent out for whatever reason. We did like a youth supplement, and it was a girls' county cup final, but like under 10s or something. But there was like a nice line to it that my sports editor at the time had liked. And it was hammering down with snow and they didn't postpone it. So these poor little girls are still running around playing football. And I thought that's the one that always stuck in my mind as the coldest, but that was really tough. I mean, Connor, my phone said it was it felt like -5. So I think actually this does have something to do with there not being fans in the stadium, doesn't it? The football stadiums, when they're empty, are just so cold.
Yeah, well, I used to notice it more when fans were in and then they left the stadium and you're sort of sat in the stand pretty much by yourself. And that's when you really sort of felt it. But yeah, I'm the same. Yesterday, I had 2 pairs of socks on, one of which was a thermal pair, thermals underneath my clothes anyway, and still was frozen. And then on top of that, I've forgotten a glove. So I'm kind of doing my job looking a bit like Michael Jackson with one glove on, which isn't the best situation. So my right hand's nice and warm and my left hand's absolutely frozen. I did think about doing a half of each, but Norwich were 2-0 up at half time. So I thought if I change it and they can see 2, then people are going to start absolutely hammering me. So maybe, I don't know if this is, I'm not really a superstitious person, but maybe the one glove is the way to go now. And that means that Norwich are going to score 4 goals at home every week. So maybe that's the plus side to look at it. But yeah, that wasn't ideal at all, really.
Connor Michael Jackson Southwell. Well, here we are, boys. Valentine's Day, just like we were 2 years ago, Pad, spending it together. Not in an Airbnb in Chorley this time around, but thankfully we've got... Yeah,
Dave, have you got your rose petals, though, to revive memories of Berry 20, whatever it was, 18, 2019?
The rose petals and the heart-shaped wine glasses. Yeah, that was an epic Facebook Live, wasn't it? One very much for the football purists. And the hardcore Pinken following, of course, will know what we're talking about. During our stay in Chorley, which was between, what was it, games at Preston and Bolton within the space of 3 days. So that was a fun Valentine's Day. But yes, a bit of a bromance, really, Pad, in terms of footballing terms. Emi Buendia, absolutely loving the fact that he could sort of be there for Timu Pukki. And when I spoke to him after the game, said as much, said he's my best partner ever, which flowed very nicely into the Valentine's Day theme. But genuinely, that second goal, when Pukki put Norwich 2 up and ended that run of 8 games without a goal in open play, it looked like it meant a real big deal to him, didn't it?
Oh, it did, yeah. I mean, particularly the Paul Chester and our photographer extraordinaire has got a great frame of the celebration. And I used it on my pointers. He looks very emotional, almost burying his head in the sort of nape of Emi Buendia's neck so as not to maybe show anybody how emotional he was. It was a bit of a step back moment for me when I saw that, because, and then when Daniel Farker talked afterwards about how he'd never seen him at trainings put so much time into his finishing and extra shooting practice during the week, and then you just think, well, you put those two together, those two images slash what Daniel had to say, and maybe underlines how heavy it would have weighed on that man, because, you know, ultimately it is a team game, but if a team isn't scoring, where do we start looking? We start looking at the striker. And that's pretty unfair to him, probably, because he hasn't had a great amount of service. Buendia, obviously, unavailable for two games, 30 minutes against Middlesbrough. But it did feel like a weight had been lifted by his reaction. And it was great to see as well, because, you know, it can't be easy for him. You know, my mind goes back to Swansea in a very tight game where you need to take your chances. And he had, for him, a very good chance when Todd Cantwell slipped him through and he pulled it wide. And then Norwich subsequently go on to lose the game, creating their own sort of downfall, really. And you can imagine that night, the day after, he's mulling over that chance. You know, if I score that at 0-0, it's a different game. Maybe Norwich go on and win that game. And he's had a lot of time to stew on that, and clearly has tried to do what he could do in terms of on the training pitch. But to actually go out there then, I mean, let's be honest, it was a pretty regulation finish, and owed everything to Emi Buendia, serving it up to him, but they all count. Doesn't matter, you know, whether it's 25 yards out, top corner, or he's rolling one in, pretty much open goal, really. And then his penalty on top as well. It was a very confident, composed penalty. And I just hope we'll get into it in more depth. But of all the strands about, yes, Norwich have finally got their mojo back, if you want to use that phrase, in the final third yesterday, of all of those, for the weeks and games ahead, Timu Pukki getting back on the short score sheet could be the biggest of them all, because, you know, we know how reliant they are on him and how important it is that he's scoring goals and how important he is to that team. And if he can now get on a nice little run, then I think hopefully we're looking back on what was only a three game sort of scoreless rut, if you want to call it. That's probably too strong to say rut, but certainly a three game fallow period for the team, because there's no doubt if him and obviously Buendia and Cantwell remain in that type of form, then I'd say to the rest of the division, watch out.
Absolutely. We'll probably come back round to a lot more Buendia stuff, I would imagine, because that, you know, Daniel brought him straight back into the team, as everyone expected, but did bring a new list back at left back in place of Jacob Sorensen, and Mario Brancic also back into midfield, replacing Lucas Rupp and sort of going into that number 10 role. But just nice and early, I really wanted to lay down a marker, Connor, that Todd Cantwell really took the bull by the horns and opened this game up, didn't he? And I thought it was both a mature moment, because he was there when his team needed him, broke any kind of Stoke resistance nice and early, stopped them from being able to park the bus or anything like that, with what was some really excellent skill. And all right, maybe a little bit of luck in there. I think it's actually a Stoke defender which prods it to Brancic. But a lovely finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've watched the goal back in full today. It's actually a really, really good team goal. It goes all the way pretty much back to Tim Krul and back up the pitch again. There's a really good moment in there from Ollie Skip where he drives pretty much to halfway and forces the play up and squeezes the game. And from there, it's all Todd Cantwell. And we've been talking, I think, for weeks, maybe with the exception of Cardiff away, about him needing to take a bit more responsibility in terms of his contributions in the final third. And when we've spoken about Norwich's sort of attacking issues more generally, we've spoken about the need to change the tempo. And that was all of those things. It was slick. He has the confidence to beat two defenders. And that's the quality that he has in his locker. And as it always comes back to with Cantwell, it's going to be about consistency and showing it on a bit of a better level. I know there have been some question marks. I didn't actually feel he was too bad at Swansea. I felt he was probably one of Norwich's better performers in terms of actually trying to make something happen. And it stems back to this maturity point for me. He looks like a player who is maturing in front of our eyes, which is really good to see, I think, after maybe the debacle of last summer and whatnot. And it just goes to show how talented he is. And for all the talk about Emi Buendia, and sadly, I think he's probably going to get overshadowed this week, it was a really good goal and a really important goal for Norwich as well, because it was the one that broke that sort of drought, if you like, wasn't it? The one that's maybe got the confidence back and flowing. And it all comes from a really good bit of movement. He's on the right side and arguably it's not really where he's supposed to be. And then he has the creativity, the imagination, and the quality ultimately to carve open a very solid, experienced Stoke side with not just a mazy run and maybe, as you say, gets a bit of luck, but also a really good finish as well, really composed. They're difficult ones when you're kind of on the angle like that to strike it in the near corner with the power and the pace that he did. It was a really good goal, and that kind of got Norwich rolling really. And I think the fact we saw more of him yesterday, and of course as the man that we'll come on to, It goes to show, I think, why they were a lot better offensively. And I don't think this improved attacking performance is a coincidence, given that they've had a week on the training pitch and Daniel Farke's been able to maybe coach them a lot better. He's a lot of ways. He's vocal on the touchline yesterday, wasn't he? He was instructing his players when to press and constantly as fullbacks to get in higher positions. And I'm sure we'll come on to sort of the defensive mishaps as well, if you like, and that was kind of a factor because of how high they pushed the fullbacks. I haven't looked at like a positional map or anything like that, but I'd imagine they were probably like wingers, Max Aarons and Janulis yesterday, and that helps Norwich. So good for Cantwell, good for Norwich, and hopefully it's the start of him finding a little bit of consistency in his game, because we've seen the maturity, and now it's time for the consistency to arrive as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's three goals and three assists for Todd. So he's going to want to get those stats up a fair bit before the end of the season, I'd imagine, if he's going to have a good chance of, you know, generating proper interest in the summer. If that's, you know, where his career is and stuff at the summer, that can probably be part to a little bit. But he's got a real showreel now, hasn't he? The goals he scored for Norwich are really quite attractive. And having seen him come through the academy ranks, and there's been flashes this season where that phrase that I used earlier, taking the bull by the horns, that's what he used to do for the under 18s, under 23s, where he was good enough that he could just say, right, I'm taking control of this game. I'm going to force this goal. I'm going to smack it in from 20 yards or whatever. And he's doing that in fits and spurts for the first team now. So if he can, as Daniel Farke talked about recently, find that consistency, which hopefully comes as you mature as a player, then he really has got an exciting career ahead of him. Pad, we're also talking in the wake of you having a chat with Stuart Webber midweek, and he talked a bit about the sort of interest in the crown jewels, didn't he? And there was a lot of interesting lines in there, but the sort of reality line was that the only interest in January was actually in Max Aarons, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Unnamed overseas club, given he was linked to Barcelona, well, more than linked, they actually picked the phone up to Stuart Webber in the summer. He was linked to Bayern Munich, PSG, I mean, literally pick the blue chip clubs around Europe and then link them to Max Aarons. I mean, domestically, Manchester United and Tottenham continue to be linked as they were all through January. But in terms of tangibles, yeah, there was a phone call from an overseas club. And as Stuart told it in the piece, which is, you know, you can consume it on pinken.com or YouTube channel we've got, that it wasn't right. And that really echoed what Daniel had said all through January, when it was the endless speculation around Arsenal and Emi Buendia, that January isn't the time when this is going to happen. It doesn't make any sense for any of the parties. I thought Daniel was added to that on Friday when we obviously put it to him, what Stuart had said, that also it wasn't right for Max Ahrens. That was clearly what came across, and that he was fully in the loop. And you know, at no point was he being cut out of whatever negotiations took place. But Max Ahrens himself feels here and now it isn't the right time. Daniel spoke about, and you could apply this to Emmy or to Todd, that, you know, the summer there will be more offers and there'll be more opportunities, and there maybe will be an offer that comes along that for the player, irrespective of the selling club and the buying club, but makes sense for the player. And if so, then it's about, can the two clubs get on the same wavelength? And you know, I increasingly think, irrespective of what league Norwich are in, they will find it very hard to keep all three of those players. I think that's the reality of it. Stuart Webber said previously about James Maddison, there will come a point where he will outgrow Norwich. And I think we'll get to that point with those three players. And that's not a reflection on Norwich. It's more realism about where Norwich are, what they're striving to be, what they're trying to do, bridge the gap between the divisions and stay in the Premier League. But ultimately, as Stuart also said last week, look at Ben Godfrey. He's gone to a club with European aspirations. They've got one of the best managers in the world in charge. They're talking about moving to a new stadium. They really are looking to get back to where Everton were in decades past. That's an opportunity that, unfortunately, was too good for Ben Godfrey, and the money made sense from Norwich. Those scenarios play out again in the summer. Alas, I feel it'll probably be the same conclusion. And if it is, certainly with Max Ahrens, I don't think any Norwich fan could begrudge him a move, because he could have probably kicked off and have probably made life very difficult in the summer. Didn't do that. Even in January, you know, he might have had his head turned. Didn't do that. It's a complete credit to that man and the advisors and the family he's got around him that he knows he's in the best place right here, right now. Keep playing games. And I thought he was very good yesterday. Connor's right. Him and Yiannoulis, for me, I've written about it. That for me, was Lewis and Ahrens in the title-winning season. High, wide, so important to how Daniel Farker wants to set his teams up. And it's probably the first time I think I've looked this season and thought, yeah, that is very, very similar to what we had 2 years ago when they were too hot for most of the division. So I'd like to see a bit more of that. Yeah, so I'm sure we'll get into, you know, this is a horrendous, to use Daniel's term, square pass or horizontal pass, as Daniel called it, for Stoke's goal. But that aside, capped by his assist, I thought we also saw what he can offer in an attacking sense. And if he and Max on the other side continue in that vein, again, I think teams need to now watch out, because it felt to me like Norwich slipped a gear yesterday. And it wasn't just about a week's training to prepare and no travel and no midweek and the physical aspect of that. It almost felt as if, just in terms of, you know, maybe Daniel's released the shackles a little bit. And that was why we got on Friday. I thought, you know, in terms of the left backs, Jacob Sorensen, right now you're a centre midfielder. I want two attack-minded, left-sided fullbacks who can fight it out for that position, because it's clear to me that Daniel has arrived at the conclusion that it's something has to change in terms of Norwich's productivity in the final third, and that is partly moving the ball quicker, which they did again yesterday, but also I think it's the template with the two fullbacks, and really, as Connor said, almost playing them as wingers. And underpinning that yesterday, obviously Stoke played their part, because they did try and take Norwich on. They didn't come here and park a bus. They tried to take Norwich on, which created opportunities and space for Norwich to exploit. There won't be every team between now and the end of the season will adopt similar tactics. But I still feel, even against teams whose almost a point to prisoner attitude, I still think if you've got Yiannoulis and Ahrens playing as progressively as that, more often than not, Norwich will find a way, because they have too much quality if they're moving the ball as quick as they did yesterday.
Yeah. Well, let's come back round to Emmy then, who did help me warm up at least, because he wanted to do his post-match interview about 2 minutes after the final whistle, didn't he? So
the quickest I've seen you move, Dave.
Yeah, I got a wave from the press officer and had to run down the stairs and not trip over in front of everyone, but made it in time. So there's already some of that stuff out there post-match, which is talking about his relationship with Pookie and the win. But also Monday morning, keep an eye out, talking about the lessons he's learned from that red card, of course, the recent red card, and that bigger issue for him, and some really telling stuff, and hopefully comes across as quite mature. But that's 8 goals, 7 assists in 23 championship games this season. I know some stats websites count penalties won as assists. I personally don't think that should be the case. you know, Joe Allen stupidly chops him down yesterday. I don't really think you can claim that as an assist personally, although I know some stats websites do. But that's as many goals as he scored in 2018-19, when, of course, he was such a good player. Was in the championship team of the season, wasn't he? Oh, no, Buendia wasn't, was he? It was Lewis, Aarons and Pukki who were in the team of the season. But, of course, was brilliant for Norwich. So he has shown how much he has developed as a player. But, Connor, it was just when he's playing like that, and it should be said as well quite early that this was a frenetic game. It could have been a different scoreline, couldn't it? It could have been 4-3, 5-4, anything really, if Stoke had actually taken some of the chances Norwich gave to them. But the heartbeat of it, the star of the show, and everyone from a Norwich perspective being able to enjoy it, is just seeing Emi Buendia play like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it's as simple, I think, as that. When he plays in that manner, Norwich City win. And I don't think there's any sort of debate for that. And look, Norwich aren't a one-man team, and not, because you have to, with that kind of creativity and brilliance, you also need the sort of the grit that is provided by Ben Gibson, by Grant Hanley, by Ollie Skip. You need that balance, and he just provides that. But crucial for me, as much as we'll, I'm sure, talk about in the next 5 minutes or so about his technical brilliance, it's his industry as well that they've missed. It's the way he presses, the intensity of his game, the way he can change the tempo effortlessly in the final third. I mean, look at the second goal. It all comes from him really, really pressing Morgan Fox and forcing a mistake, and then having the composure and the technical quality to lay it across. And that's why, for as much as we bemoan the red cards and we label him as naive, you need him to play on that knife edge, because that's kind of the benefit of it. And that is kind of what makes him the player that he is. And Norwich haven't been as aggressive and they haven't been as creative without him. And he is so important to what they do. I think, if being it Valentine's Day, there's probably a lot of Norwich City fans that would like to write some sort of love letter to him. But he's just brilliant. And I know you mentioned him not being in Player of the Year 2 years ago. He will be this time. I don't think there's any debate about that. I'd be shocked if he doesn't win the Player of the Season award for Norwich as well. And it's becoming increasingly difficult. And people won't want to have this sort of conversation in February, but it's very difficult to see how he's a Norwich City player next year for me, regardless of if they get promoted, because I think he's probably at a level now where we can probably consider him better than maybe James Maddison was when he was at Norwich, which is quite a statement to make. So it's so important to what they do. Ensuring that he stays on the pitch, as Daniel said, is going to be so crucial, I think, between now and the end of the season, to which way it goes. But as Pad said, with him, with Timo Pukki, with Todd Cantwell delivering hopefully the kind of goal that we saw yesterday as well, that's quite a terrifying prospect for teams. And I know we've kind of spoken about their lack of creativity in recent weeks. If they can keep those three fit, in form and firing, then they'll be a force to be reckoned with for the remainder of the season. I've got absolutely no doubt about that. But they're a better side with him in it. It's up to him now to learn from his red card mistakes and make sure he channels that industry and that aggression in the right way, like we saw yesterday, and gets that maturity across as well. So still some more to come from him in terms of development, in terms of mentality, but you can't deny his brilliance, I don't think.
Yeah, it should be pointed out as well that Brentford did take top spot in midweek. First time in almost 3 months that Norwich have been knocked off the top of the table. They're in great form, but we're recording ahead of their game against Barnsley. They're at home Sunday afternoon. But I think really where Norwich are, that doesn't matter. We doesn't really matter what Brentford do, whether they reclaim top spot. It's about trying to push clear of third place. And they've been helped a little bit by Swansea's game at Sheffield Wednesday being postponed, haven't they? So they've now got games in hand at Wednesday and Blackburn to squeeze into a busy schedule. So from that point of view, we shall see. But as I mentioned, Pad, there were some hairy moments in this game, weren't there? It wasn't like, I think the scoreline maybe is a little bit more comfortable than it actually was, because Stoke were in the game. They did cause Norwich problems, and Norwich did certainly cause themselves some problems along the way as well, didn't they? Grant Hanley and Kenny McLean in particular.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Yeah, I mean, either side for me of the half, well, I say either side, probably a good 15, 20 minutes either side of half time, they were as good as Norwich, I thought, as an attacking force. And yeah, Stephen Fletcher with his aerial threat, very difficult to subdue him completely, winning flick-ons and disallowed goal, the correct decision, headed goal, clearly offside for the break. And but yeah, I mean the way they got back in was touched on it already. You know, just you can't believe you've seen it type of moment. Really, that you know, particularly for a January signing keen to impress, that isn't the impression you're looking to make. You know, to cut back inside and play a ball. Daniel called it 30-yard ball across his own box. As if he would, if he'd have wanted to pick out Nick Powell, he couldn't have executed that pass any better. He's clearly looking for Max Aarons. And I don't know if he just looked down and at the moment he's played the ball, he just hasn't seen Powell's movement. But tidy finish as well. You know, Tim Krul came out quick, but he just calmly slotted it. But that came after Kenny McLean had done something very similar and was very fortunate to not escape with a similar punishment, where he just literally turned back towards his own goal and played in Stephen Fletcher. I've no idea what either of those players are thinking there. I mean, Daniel, after the game, tried to mitigate and talked about the pitch and having to take more care with their passing, and maybe you lose a little bit of spatial awareness. But I think he's been very generous to both of those. It was just a complete brain freeze given the cold weather. Maybe that was the factor. And at that stage, when it goes 2-1, you do fear, you know, off the back of a 3 or 4 game spell where Norwich have found it very difficult to grind out wins. That was what we were set for the final 30 minutes. But obviously within 3 minutes of Yiannoulis's horrendous pass, he's burst into the byline and cutting the ball back, and Buendia's getting ahead of Mario to very, very good finish, sweeping it into the bottom corner on the half volley. So that was the game. You know, if Norwich hadn't got that third one as quick as they did, I think we'd have, you know, you'd still like to think Norwich would have had enough about them just to see out the win, but it would have been a far harder affair and we wouldn't have been quite as positive and upbeat about Norwich are back. Norwich now are going to score goals and sweep teams aside. And I thought that was credit to Stoke. You know, they put Norwich under pressure. They should have opened the scoring. In fact, just popped into my head. It literally within the first 2 minutes from that corner in front of the Barkley, Obi Mikel unmarked 6-7 yards out and has just very poorly sliced it off target. They're the fine margins. You know, if they go ahead then again, a bit like how Pookie missed that chance at Swansea, it's a different game. And that's probably stating the obvious. But Norwich were very good at what they did yesterday, but they were probably aided by Stoke not being clinical enough, because they certainly carved out opportunities, albeit in one or two instances with the aid of Norwich players. And then Norwich just had a little bit of rubber green in those key moments. So, yeah, you do need a little bit of that to get yourself back up and running. But by no means, I mean, it ends up a 4-1 and you think this is a very comfortable one-sided affair, and Daniel thought it could have added a few more goals, and that is true. But I don't think it was a 4-1 in terms of how the game panned out. It was very open. It was all tweeting in the second half, like a runaway train. You know, there was no control on the game at all. Norwich, it was literally a basketball type of game at that stage, and hence why he wanted to get Lucas Rupp on the pitch, I think, just to try and douse it down a little bit. But ultimately, they did what they had to do, and we won't really probably, when we move forward, and if Norwich get to where they want to get to, we won't worry too much that Stoke certainly caused them a few problems. I think that's probably the nature of it now. I think, you know, they need to obviously, as Connor rightly said, commit bodies forward and be a bit aggressive now to try and start getting the goals they need and the wins they need. That might leave them a little bit more vulnerable now at the back between now and the end of the season. We might just have to accept that these games are going to be a little bit frayed around the edges, rather than, as we've seen, Norwich have 70% of the ball, carve out 20 chances, and literally it's just a flow from one end of Tim Krul's goal to the opposition goal. I don't think increasingly with the pressure and the expectancy that is now coming on these games, because we've all experienced it 2 years ago, it doesn't matter who they play now. They are going to be very tough affairs where, you know, teams will fancy their chances because they will look at that. I'm sure Coventry, for example, now their next opponent midweek, Mark Robbins, he will look at how open Norwich were in phases of that game yesterday and will feel they can exploit it. Not, they were very poor in the FA Cup, Coventry, but they were very good in the league here. So they won't think they can't get something out of the game. And that's possibly the gamble Daniel needs to take now, that if it's the risk and reward, that if you want to commit bodies forward and have an approach where you need to score goals and try and win games, they probably are going to be a little bit more vulnerable. And I think in that context, Ollie Skip becomes even more important to play. You saw yesterday some of his challenges. There was one sliding tackle in front of the dugouts in the second half to halt a counter. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. The athleticism to cover the ground that man shows, and the maturity for a 20-year-old. Yeah, I think between now and the season, as much as it'll be Buendia and Cantwell and Pukki, it might also be Ollie Skip as well.
Yeah, I thought he was really excellent yesterday, and he did go off a bit of an injury scare. And I had a look back at that this morning, and we all thought he got concussion at first, didn't we? Because it was a bit of a collision in the box at a corner. But it looks to me that it's actually Ben Gibson that gets the whack to the head. And then, as Farker said after the game, Skip actually gets a finger in the eye or something. I think it might be Ben Gibson's finger which goes in. And because he looked dazed and a bit sort of wobbly on his feet, I think he was just in a lot of pain, wasn't it? But at first, it looked like he was concussed. But hopefully, that's not going to be a big problem for him. But you can see that they're really, they've got a torch and they're shining it in his eye. And his eye looks really like he's struggling a bit.
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me. And you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I was really pleased with the intensity that we saw from Norwich yesterday in possession there, the way that they were moving it quickly and that they knew that they needed that intensity. So although the scoreline did perhaps flatter them and could have been a tighter and maybe even more goals, I think Norwich were the better team and did deserve to get the 3 points as they did. I did want to mention on Kenny McLean as well, you mentioned his mistake. I think I first noticed this in a Scotland game. When he makes a mistake, when he gives away a ball, he does this sort of like nervous hop where he sort of like jumps on the spot like, oh no, what have I done? And he almost just sort of panics. And he did it again yesterday where you can see in his mind, he literally thought, how the hell have I managed to just pass that to the higher player? So yeah, that's quite funny. Watch out for that one. Let's come back to Yiannoulis, Connor, because as Pad teed up, it was a horrific error for their goal. One of those moments where you want the ground to swallow you up, that sort of classic moment, isn't it? Where it was just 100% his fault, he knew it. But almost immediately, within 4 minutes, he gets that moment of redemption because he did really well for the third goal, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think when a player makes a mistake like that, the response is always key because, as you say, some players will want the ground to swallow them up and others will get their head up and say, right, that's done, let's try and make up for it. And he kind of did that. And that's really positive, I think, particularly for his sort of development in the Championship and for the rest of the season. There are going to be hard battles and there may be some more errors to come, but take that mistake out of it. And I actually thought it was probably his best performance for Norwich so far. So it's a difficult one. And Pad's right. There were moments where if you'd have kind of not looked at it properly, you'd have thought it was Jamal Lewis and Max Ahrens on either flank, which is, again, really positive for how Norwich City want to play and how their fullbacks get up. And yeah, it was a real test of resolve, I guess. And I would imagine there would have been some Daniel Farker, maybe even Stuart Webber looking at it the same, right? He's made a mistake and that response is going to be pivotal because for his teammates, that's how you develop trust, to the fact that they know that you're keen to make amends and keep your head up. It's so important, as I said, particularly in the Championship. So that was good. And I don't think we can sort of deny his attacking quality. I think there are clearly some moments defensively where perhaps there are a few more questions, but in terms of his attacking quality, he offered a real threat and Daniel Farker was constantly on him yesterday in terms of his position and wanting him to push higher. And as Paddy said, that does make it a little bit more risk and reward. And that does probably make him look questionable defensively because it always looks like he's in retreat. So it's difficult. And that trade-off is kind of a difficult one to strike, because you have to get the best out of him offensively, but equally make sure that he's good enough defensively to do his job. So maybe he's still adapting to that, but it was a big step forward, I think, compared to his performance against Millwall a couple of weeks ago, where he looked a bit like a rabbit in the headlights. So if he can provide that sort of performance more regularly, obviously minus the error, then that's going to be really pivotal, because this is a league of hard knocks. It is a really good humbling ground as well, regardless of where a player has come from and what sort of pedigree they have. And he will be now fully aware of that, I think, with the three experiences that he's had at this level. And hopefully we see a lot more of the assists than we do of the mistake in the weeks to come, because I think a lot of people probably looked at that yesterday and definitely saw the talent that he has. It's now about seeing it maybe similarly to Todd Cantwell a bit more consistently, albeit he's been here for three games, and about him kind of stepping forward and showing what he can do for the remainder of the season. So, yeah, big step forward, but hopefully more to come as well.
Yeah, and I thought Farker's body language on the sidelines right from early in the first half was quite unusual for him, in that he was really barking orders right from the start, demanding a lot. Pukki and Vrančić felt his wrath at one point, didn't they? Because they weren't pressing properly. He was, you know, bickering with Buendia at one point. Farker was pumped for this one. They knew how important it was to get straight back on track, because now you look at that set of results and it's just one defeat, isn't it? Two draws, one defeat, and now they're back on track. And if they kick on from here, as we'll come on to it shortly, then we probably won't look back on this little segment of the season too much. Overall then, Pad, looking at the table, again, as I say, before the Brentford game, but 5 points clear of Swansea in third and 18 points clear of Cardiff in seventh. So Norwich are still in an excellent position, aren't they? And hopefully the injury situation is about to get even better, and unless something takes a turn for the worse, because Jordan Hugill and Marcus Stephen are not too far away from joining back into the squad either. To sort of move that along a little bit, what did you make of Mario Vrančić's performance coming back into the number 10 role? I did him for our player watch, so you can read my thoughts at pinken.com, and I thought he was pretty good, but he certainly wasted some chances to really have a big impact on the game.
He did, but that for me, because I'm simply measuring it, we've talked at length about this in recent sort of pods and video shows, that it's about assists and about goals in that 10 role. And we haven't seen, you know, we're talking about Emi Buendia's numbers and how stunning they are for an attacking midfielder. And his, by comparison, are nowhere near. But I mean, we had the back heel for Cantwell. Buendia should have scored, you know, from that little scoop pass when he rolled him in. First chance pretty much for Norwich, where he sort of miscued it and Gunners paddled it away on the ground. That would have been another assist. Yes, he had a couple of opportunities. There was a volley, I think, from an Aaron's cross, which was a bit of a tame effort, straight a gun. But I thought that was better. And I think it was better primarily because, you know, you had Buendia, Cantwell in a nice flow, and Pukki looked a lot sharper than he has done of late. And I think if he's got those options around him, and of course, you know, without labouring the point, you've got Aaron's and you've got Yiannoulis offering that width as well. It's an easier game for him in that 10 role because he's able to knit together something a bit more productive than he has hitherto in that role. So for me, he is now the 10. Dal came on again towards the end. And on that point, you were talking about resources. Yeah, I mean, Daniel basically said that him, Dal, Ida and Onel are now physically and fitness-wise at a level they could start games if he chose to throw them in. So, you know, the pressure will now start to come on Mario. If he isn't producing goals and assists, I think we'll start to see a little bit more of Dal. Marco Stiepermann, him and Jordan Hugo with a fair window the next day or two should be back in team training, probably not for the Coventry game, but certainly for the weekend coming. And that's more options. And you saw yesterday's 18, no Poeta, no Barley Mumba, no Josh Martin. That is now the level of resource and strength in depth. And that's even before you get to adding Hugo and Stiepermann to the mix. So he's got some serious decisions to make now, Daniel, moving forward, as long as, which you always have to put the caveat with Norwich in the Championship, no more injuries or no more, dare we say, in the current climate, any coronavirus-related issues. Thankfully, that looks to have been the last couple of rounds of testing, no positive cases. So you would hope maybe that's a positive sign moving forward on that aspect. But there is no doubt, and Daniel made a very salient point, that as much as we're praising those lads yesterday in the attacking areas, they can now look over to the bench yesterday and they can see Adamida if you're Pookie, you can see Dowell if you're Mario Vrancic, Buendia maybe to a lesser extent in Cantwell, but you can see on El Hernandez if he wants to do something slightly different in those wide areas. Then you add in Hugel, you add in Stiepermann. Those lads now in the 11 will know they have to perform because it isn't a case that Daniel really doesn't have any options to change the game. And that can only drive up the collective performance levels of Norwich in these next few games as well. So, yeah, it does feel everything is maybe falling back their way, whereas for the last two or three weeks, it felt like maybe the wind was in their faces a bit. So that is the Championship, peaks and troughs. And if that is the case, and really Daniel, for the first time this season, has pretty close to having a full strength squad to pick from, they need to make the most of it, because I do still think that's what gives them the edge over Brentford and Swansea. I think maybe pound for pound in terms of the starting 11s, there's not much between the three at the minute, but I think in terms of the squad depth, there's no doubt in my mind Norwich far better squad than the other two teams, and if they hit a little bit of adversity and some of their key players are out for any length of time, that's where maybe Norwich can make a little bit ground on those two teams, I think.
Yeah, if Brentford lost Tony, for instance, they don't have that sort of squad depth. I mean, his stats are ridiculous, Tony. I think he's got like 9 assists as well as the 23 goals, isn't he? So he's having a heck of a season. I think they only paid about $5 million for him up front is ridiculous. It could be worth a lot more down the road. But yeah, Connor, the one that stands out really is Quaheta not even making the squad, a Poland international. Do you sort of go along with Pad there in terms of that? You can't see the team changing, that Vrancic has got that shirt for now, or do you not think he did quite enough?
Yeah, I think it is his shirt at the minute. I think it's a difficult one, because I think until either Kieran Dowell or maybe even Marco Stiepermann in the weeks to come put in a very good cameo off the bench where there's a goal or there's a contribution or there's an assist, I don't really think that they have a valid claim to make for that 10 shirt at the moment. I mean, for all we're talking about Vrancic, it was still a very good assist yesterday for Cantwell. So it's difficult, because I kind of get what you mean. And someone tweeted me before the game and said that they felt in terms of tempo and stuff, he can maybe bring that down a little bit, because he's looking for those cute intricate passes, which is maybe a little bit more beneficial when you're playing against a team who do put bodies behind the ball, and Norwich do enjoy a lot to the ball. I remember against Birmingham earlier on this season, where he played in that kind of deeper midfield role as opposed to a 10, and looked a lot better. So yeah, I think it would need someone else to step up rather than him to drop off. I just think in terms of balance at the moment, he's quite important. And then of course you've got the option like they did yesterday, where maybe they got themselves far enough ahead and the game was, as Paddy said, a bit of a runaway train and you need to calm it down a little bit. They've now got the options on the bench where they can do that and manage games a bit more effectively. So I don't think it's as much of an issue as maybe it was again 2-3 weeks ago. But let's be frank, if he does want to keep that shirt, then performances are going to have to improve. Of course, there's a contract situation to be resolved as well, so no doubt he'll want to be playing for that. So there's plenty to play for Mario Vrancic. But yeah, I personally would like to see a little bit more from him from an attacking sense. Otherwise, I think it's fairly inevitable that at some point he will dip out and it'll be Kieran Dowell or Marco Stiepermann that takes his place.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because his contract situation, of course, Stuart Webber told Pad that they are going to have a chat with Mario Vrancic and Alex Tetti and Michael McGovern about potential new deals. So they'll see how things develop with that over the rest of the season. He's in his fourth season now, isn't he, Mario Vrancic? So he's been here for a while, been here the whole time that Fralka has. So this kicks off a really busy spell, and what we've just talked about in terms of that strength and depth and all those players being available could be really crucial, because they've got midweek games all the way through until mid-March here. They go to Coventry Wednesday night. We'll come to you on that in a minute, Pad, because obviously they're your hometown team. Then Rotherham at home next Saturday, Birmingham away the following Tuesday, and Wickham away the following Saturday. And then that big game, which we trailed ahead of this one, which is looming on the horizon, Brentford at home, Wednesday, March the 3rd, which could be a titanic clash if things go well for both teams between then and now. So Kov pad, they seem to have tailed off a little bit. Lost at Cardiff this weekend. I appreciate you obviously don't get to keep up with them 100% because your head's always in Norwich City stuff. But they're only just above the relegation zone, aren't they? They seem to have tailed off a bit from that early spirit they've shown.
Yeah, one win in six now since that FA Cup defeat. Where, you know, relative to Norwich, I saw obviously now probably not so, but you know when Norwich was struggling a little bit prior to Stoke, you know, was it because of the approach they took at Barnes in the FA Cup and that almost stalled their momentum in the league a little bit, and whether you could apply the same accusation to Coventry, because let's be honest, they were very poor here at Carrow Road. You know, game was over really with that two goal burst inside the first sort of 10 minutes or so that day in that third round tie. And then since then, like I say, one win in six. They've got McCardiff yesterday under new management, of course, Mick McCarthy, and well beaten. They were 3-0 down. They've got a late consolation. I see Josh Murphy actually scored for Cardiff. So it looks like he's getting a bit more action under McCarthy than he did under Neil Harris. But yeah, you look at the league table, and really, if Sheffield Wednesday didn't have the points deduction from the start of the season, they if not in the bottom three, then they're very close to it. So promoted club last season, and the aim would have been to stay in the Championship. And they looked like at one point they were going to do that fairly comfortably. Mark Robbins is a very good coach, and they have a very clearly defined style of play, not too dissimilar to Norwich in many regards, but they are finding it quite tough. And maybe that, you know, lack of Championship nous is beginning to catch them out a little bit. I mean, relative for Norwich fans, I see Sam McCallum's playing regularly, played 80 minutes again yesterday. And that's good from a sort of development point of view with Norwich. But it just underlines if, because clearly Norwich, in terms of Sam McCallum, felt he wasn't quite a ready first-team option for them. But at Coventry, he's playing every week. So it tells you the relative sort of expectations of the squad and the ability in the squad, maybe. So it won't be easy for Norwich. But clearly, I think, you know, they should have enough about them, given everything we've discussed so far on the pod, to have too much for Coventry, I think. I mean, you know, Coventry, for me, is they'll probably be looking at Norwich as a bit of a free hit in terms of, you know, they always say, don't they, the teams down the bottom, it's the games around the teams they play, which are going to define where they finish up in this season. And for them, it is all about staying up. I've actually just got the fixtures for them. They got Norwich midweek, and then lo and behold, they host Brentford on Saturday. So that is a very, very tough week if you're Mark Robbins. And believe it or not, the following midweek, they go to Swansea. So basically, Coventry's next three fixtures are Norwich, Brentford at home, Swansea away. That is a very, very difficult. So I've really distressed myself looking at those fixtures from a Coventry point of view, because it's conceivable they don't get any points and they are in the bottom three when they go to Blackburn at the end of February. So, you know, from a Norwich perspective, they will look at it and think, you know, this is a team who, yes, could cause us one or two problems, but aren't in a very, very good vein of form and really aren't probably going to have too much confidence around them as well. So I think for Norwich, go there, be professional, and they should really be looking to come away with a win for me, I think.
Ouch. Good luck, Coventry. But yeah, after Wednesday night, of course. Yeah, that means we're going to St Andrews twice in 7 days as well, doesn't it? To play Coventry Wednesday night and then Birmingham the following Tuesday. So, Connor, in terms of that little run of fixtures and what we've just been through as well, just finally to wrap up the pod, it feels to me like that little bad spell, the little dry spell, has just been a really helpful reminder in terms of everyone just not getting carried away, of just checking your expectations a little bit, trying to take it a little bit more game by game, because Norwich have got an opportunity here, haven't they? Playing Coventry, Rotherham, Birmingham, Wickham, they're all not doing particularly well. But if any Norwich fan is going into any of those four games and thinking that Norwich is just going to roll them over, then they have not been paying attention to this season, have they? Beyond the fact that this is the most unprecedented season, certainly of the modern era, but possibly ever, outside of, you know, being paused for World War II and things like that. The Championship is always incredibly difficult. This year it's been even more tight and even more difficult. And the one thing you know is that if Norwich can nail it, if Norwich can play as well as they can play, then they can beat anyone at this level. But if they're just a little bit off it, anybody can upset them.
Yeah, particularly those teams at the bottom around this time of the season. Look at what Rotherham have done in recent weeks, where they've picked up some really big form. And of course, they travel to Carrow Road on Saturday, don't they? So yeah, you're right. If there's either an extra percent that they're off it or they're not quite in top gear, then these teams will capitalise. If anyone thinks that going to Adams Park to play Wickham on a Sunday afternoon is going to be a stroll, a nice gentle afternoon for Norwich, then they're mistaken, I think, given what we saw in the home game and how well Wickham played that afternoon. So there's never anything that can be taken for granted. And you're right, all the cards are there for Norwich. They have pretty much a full squad. They've got the quality. They've got Timu Pukki back amongst the goals. Everything looks very positive. But you're right. Sometimes these teams at the bottom, where they are fighting for their lives, are often more dangerous than those teams in the middle. I look at maybe a side like Bristol City at the moment, who are sinking like a stone and their season is pretty much done. I think in many ways, you'd much rather play a team like that than maybe like Norwich have, what is it, four of their next four against teams in the bottom five. So it is a good run of fixtures in terms of league standings and a good opportunity for them to stamp their authority on this promotion race and prove that those who were writing them off in their last week were very wrong. But equally, they have to maintain those levels. And that's why an attacking performance like that yesterday was probably more important, because they're now going to face four sides that will look to be a lot more resilient and a lot more stubborn and make life a lot more difficult. So if they were going into this game having just endured another 90 minutes of not scoring a goal and of being frustrated, then the next four fixtures maybe wouldn't necessarily pose the same joy that maybe they will now. So you're right, it is difficult. You can never take the championship for granted. And I wrote last week, if the moment you think you've cracked the division, it catches you with a blow on the chin. And that's kind of what it feels like. And who knows, maybe Brentford will get that when they play Barnsley today or whatever. It happens to everyone. It's a really good, humbling division. And Norwich City will learn that. And, you know, I think I said after the Cardiff game, if there was going to be a dip for Norwich, it would come in the next six games because of the fixtures. This on paper looks a lot kinder, but as you've rightly said there, in reality, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, and just to continue that train of thought, Pad, to close the show, if they do take a good haul of points from this next four games, as they probably should if they do the business, then they would have 13 games remaining going into that Brentford match, and they would be in a fantastic position, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was actually just calling up Swox. I'm interested now with where Swansea go. I mean, they've got Forest midweek. Chris Ewan seems to have got them certainly solid.
Yeah.
Not beyond the realms that they could get something at Swansea. Certainly make it difficult for Swansea and frustrate them. Out Swansea, to be fair, the way they've set up this season. Huddersfield away, Coventry, and then Bristol City at home. So as much as we're talking about Norwich on paper have a favourable run of results, that doesn't look too onerous to me if you're Swansea. And I won't look at Brentford, but I just think, yeah, that's the reality is now. Stuart Webber said last week we're probably four or five games away from actually defining it as the run-in. So still feels it's a little bit too early to more or less detach those three from the rest and say, right, you lads fight it out for the automatics. But you look at the points differentials there, not only to Norwich to seventh, which is 18 points, is it? But even Norwich to like fourth place team now, you know, that's a lot of points to start overhauling with the games running out. I mean, we're getting into mid-February now. So, yeah, let's see where we are after this batch of games. But if Norwich are, you know, top or second after this batch of games, then I think they're set fair for, you know, the official run-in. And given a little bit of luck with injuries, I'll just repeat what I said. I think Norwich squad will be good enough to get them in the top two, whether that's good enough to win the title or not, I'm not sure. But you just think that it looks like we've come through this little bit of turbulence, come out the other side with a good result yesterday, follow that up against Coventry and Rotherham. And then, you know, the clouds have lifted and it's blue skies. And let's see if they other two teams can go with them, because I think Norwich will only get stronger from here with more players available, more options. Confidence starting to surge back through the team, scoring goals. Buendia is so important. Keep him sort of fit, firing and focused and on the right path. Let's see what Brentford and Swansea have got. Certainly Brentford don't look like they're going to be running out of steam, but, you know, the Championship did funny things to them towards the end of last season when they blew up pretty spectacularly. So, you know, I wouldn't be rushing to say that they're going to be over the hill and far away. I think it's going to be very tight between now and the end of the season. I saw a lot, funny enough, just popped into my head. I see Palace being linked with Steve Cooper, the Swansea manager. So, you know, possibly if that is the case, and that's something in the background moving forward, you know, that's those type of distractions you don't need around a group, because he inevitably will be having to probably field questions about the Palace job and so on. And he won't want that, I'm sure. But there's so many variables and so many moving parts. And I think ultimately we just have to back Daniel Farke and Stuart Webber. They've constructed a squad which is good enough when the dust settles, however many games left to play, that Norwich have enough points on the board. And I frankly think they probably will have. But yeah, the Championship, if underlined in these last two or three games prior to Stoke, take nothing for granted, and certainly don't treat anything in the Championship with disrespect, because as Conor Riley says, that's the right way to end up looking a bit silly, as Leeds did two seasons ago, you know, when most people thought they were going to be the standout team and it didn't quite happen that way. So just stay in the moment. Coventry next, go there, perform as they did on Saturday. That should be good enough to get a result, and then just roll it on again. That's all they can do.
There we go. Cooper sounds like he would be a good replacement for Roy Hodgson as well. They're sort of defensive, well-organised managers. So you can see the sense in that. I see David Wagner also being linked with the Bournemouth vacancy, and Marco Silva, the former Hull and Everton boss as well. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. But, you know, as Conor mentioned earlier, Watford beating Bristol City 6-0. We're not even talking about them sort of being in the mix. So there's some good teams who are still going to be chasing hard as well. But, yeah, the first time Norwich has scored four goals in a league game in nearly 2 years, since that 4-0 win over QPR in April 2019. And you think how many times Norwich scored four goals in that season. What, at Sheffield Wednesday, Swansea, Bolton, Millwall at home. So it's been quite a while, but it's great to see some goals going in at Carrow Road like that again. But the biggest achievement for me on Saturday was to socially distance, of course, meet up with our photographer Paul Chesterton to do some all-important sticker swaps. We both had a pile of swaps, which we swapped over, because I'm now down to 9 stickers for the sticker books. I'm nearly there. If you're still collecting, they'll still be on sale for quite a while yet. Pinkandshop.co.uk if you're still trying to finish off your book. But that'll do. Thank you very much for listening. Pinkin.com, of course, is the place to go for all the analysis and reaction from that win over Stoke. And we'll soon be turning our attentions to the build-up to the game at Coventry, which is a 7 o'clock kickoff on Wednesday night. As ever, you can also hear us on Future Radio 107.8 FM. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and stay safe.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.